good, those films. Wow, I want to come to everything here. Can I just come here and come every week and watch all of that? It's brilliant. Hi, everybody. It's really good to be back here. I think it's quite a long time since I was last here, but it's always really good to be with you. And you've been doing this series on fear, and you've had three women talking about no fear. So you've had Bev and Rachel. They're both amazing, aren't they? Full of wisdom, loads of stuff to say, and, you know, it's great to be talking about this subject. I often get asked to talk about fear, and one of the reasons is because I love talking about the fact that what Jesus calls us to as followers of Jesus is a life that is increasingly free of fear. I passionately believe that. I think that is how it's supposed to be, and that is a message that the world needs to hear, isn't it? Because actually life is full of fear, or the potential of being afraid. So it's really good to talk about this, and hopefully I'll give you a few tips and ways of thinking about fear and anxiety that might be helpful tonight. So that's good. Before I do that, I'm going to give a 30-second plug for something that I'm involved with that Philip's given me permission to share about. So we talk a lot about worship. You've talked about worship tonight. We've done some worship. And Matt had that little video about worship. The truth is, Christians are interested in worship because a lot of what we do takes the form of worship. And there's a bit of a mystery around it. And one of the things that we sometimes say is there can be a bit of a tension between the things we sing and the things we go out and do afterwards. You know, the things we say, your love drives out all fear. And then there's a kind of like, does it match up afterwards? And one of the things that we, a little group that I'm involved with called Love Bristol, we've asked two radical people to come together for a little weekend, small weekend conference in 2 weeks' time at Woody's called Wonder. And it's just talking about how we can worship and what it is to sing worship, but also to lay down our lives in radical acts of worship. So one of them, Shane Claiborne, has been to prison for protesting peacefully about bringing the death penalty to an end in America. The other one, Jason, is a singer-songwriter who believes that we can push into the presence of God and find healing and power there for living. So if you're interested in that, you can find it. There's a website called Wonder, so just have a look for that and then you can buy a ticket. Okay, plug over. How are you doing on the fear spectrum? Have you found that you've questioned some of your fears over the last couple of weeks? And would you call yourself an anxious or fearful person? I think that probably in this room there's a bit of a spectrum of fearfulness. And some people would say, hands up, yeah, I am prone to fear and anxiety. I'm the sort of person who lies on my bed at night and my mind is going 100 miles an hour and I think about the things that I'm afraid of and it can get me into a real stew. And that's my life. And it defines some of the things that I do in life. I've stopped doing some things because of those fears. Others of us might say, no, I'm not particularly prone to fear. That's not my thing. And, you know, somewhere between those two extremes, we all lie. I would say that actually fear is a very human problem. And all humans, however they appear on the outside, are a bit wired for fear. We've got a bit of a tendency to fall into fear, and we find ways of coping with that fear. And we do all sorts of things to try and cope and steady ourselves. But the truth is, all of us have areas of life where we fall into fear. And some of us are good at kind of denying it a little bit and saying, that's not me. But if you dig a little deeper, most of us have this ability to sort of fall into fear. In mental health surveys, about a fifth of people are anxious all the time. And lots of others find anxiety a constant part of their life. A survey said about students that about a third of them hide because of anxiety in their rooms and sometimes won't come out. That's a lot of students who are struggling with a problem of anxiety. And all of that contrasted with the reality that several studies have shown that Worry, things that we worry about, up to potentially 85% of the things that we think about and worry about never happen. 85%, that's nearly all of it. So people who spend time worrying and being anxious, actually the reality is that a lot of the stuff we worry about doesn't ever happen. And we have no real control over them anyway. Worry is a terrible habit. And it's been linked to all sorts of stuff that is not good for human beings. It's been linked to things like premature aging, cancer, heart disease, the stress hormones that are released when you're worried and anxious shrink your brain and lower your IQ. That is not a good thing, is it? So actually, if you want to be somebody who's solving problems, worrying about problems is actually going to be totally the wrong thing to do because your brain will be shrinking while you're doing it. I met a neighbour on my street a few little while ago, and she's a consultant researcher into Alzheimer's. And I said to her, "Anything new on the Alzheimer's scene?" Funny question, admittedly. And she said, "Well," I said, "Is there anything? What's research telling us about Alzheimer's?" And she said, "Oh, a lifetime of anxiety and worry seems to lead towards" things like dementia and Alzheimer's and an increased amount of that. And that's interesting, isn't it? It is bad for us to worry. I thought of reading out a list of all the sort of most common worries. There's 30 really most common worries, but I didn't want to add any fuel to anybody's fire, so I'm not going to tell you anything else to worry about. Number 30 is losing your hair, by the way. The thing that's interesting is that if you read the New Testament, there is this kind of tone to the New Testament, if you're familiar with it, and the more you read it, particularly in the Gospels, and then when the New Testament writers picked up the threads of Christianity and began to sort of pad it out and say, this is what we've understood to have happened in our lives as we become followers of Jesus, there's this incredible tone of cheerful optimism. And all of it is in a context where persecution is happening, they're a minority, they're an enslaved people, the Jewish people who have become Christians, they're still part of the Roman rule, they're being persecuted, being chased from house to house because of this new faith that they're following. And yet there's this amazing cheerfulness and courage and a sort of sense that people aren't really worrying. And I find that fascinating. And I think we've got to conclude that they've found something that is going to help us with worry and anxiety. So we're going to look at some of those things. But let me just say to you this, that fear and anxiety can cast a great shadow over life. And you'll know that if you're familiar with it. And it can be like living in a fog. It makes everything a little bit grey and a bit hard work. And it's hard to see see where to go when our minds are clouded with fear. I read this fact recently. It's really interesting that from the American Bureau of Standards, so it's kind of like a body that sort of measures things, and they measured a fog in New York that covered, and they estimated that a fog that covers 7 blocks in New York to a depth of 100 feet, a dense fog, contains less than a cup of water. Isn't that an amazing thought? That a fog can be so pervasive and so destroy sight and vision and yet come from such a small thing. And when I read that, I thought that is such a brilliant metaphor for fear, because it's something about looking into the face of fear and learning to harness the power of faith and courage that makes fear just diminish as we look it straight in the eye. And I'm hoping that I can help you to look at some of your fears and some of the things that you do in response to fear tonight and give you a few tips really on how to navigate through some of those things. So we're going to read a Bible passage in a moment. And the Bible passage is a well-loved Bible passage for people. If anyone's been brought up in Christianity, they will have read this story as I did as a little child. And it's from Mark chapter 4. And it is the story of Jesus and the disciples in a storm on a lake. and what happens to them. So, is it going to come up? I'm going to read it to us from here. So, leaving the crowd behind, they took him along, Jesus, just as he was in the boat. There were also other boats with him, and a furious squall, that's a storm, that's a good word, isn't it, came up, and the waves broke over the boat so that it was nearly swamped. Jesus was in the stern, sleeping on a cushion. Nice bit of detail. The disciples woke him and said to him, "Teacher, don't you care if we drown?" He got up, rebuked the wind, and said to the waves, "Quiet, be still." Then the wind died down, and it was completely calm. And that is such a familiar story. And I've read that story since I was a little girl. And it's a great picture of just a little snippet of life with Jesus. And I've got to say, I totally believe that story. I'll just say that now. I believe that it's a literal story. It's not a metaphor for something. I believe that Jesus got in the boat with those people, the disciples, his friends, and they went out into the middle of the Lake Galilee. I've been there. I've been on a boat in the middle of the Lake Galilee. It was nice and calm at the time. And I believe a storm brewed and came up, and that Jesus stood up and he told the storm to be quiet, and it did. I believe that. And it does, I think it tells us something about how to deal with the storms of life and what we're like. So if you look, first of all, at the disciples, their behaviour is interesting, isn't it? Because I think that just one of the things that happens in the storms of life and in the things that make us anxious is that we often feel trapped. And the disciples were trapped on a boat in the middle of a storm. And, you know, these guys, they're seasoned fishermen, and they know their lake, and they know that storms are dangerous. And here they are in this little scenario where this storm comes up, and they have to shake Jesus awake, and they say to him, "Don't you care about us?" And then he does this sort of extraordinary thing where he just tells the lake to calm down. And they watch him do that. And afterwards, what happens is that they actually find, they ask themselves the questions. Jesus actually says to them, "What is the matter? Why are you so afraid? Have you no faith?" And they find themselves asking the question, well, who is he again? Who is that guy again that we're with? It raises all these questions. Jesus asks them a question. Why are you so afraid? And they say, who is he? Such an interesting little passage. But these disciples, they're trapped. And one of the realities is that when things brew up in our lives, what happens is that everything else we know about ourselves and a situation often becomes very obscured. And all we can see are the circumstances. And this is true for these disciples. All they can see is the storm and the fact that they're perishing, that they're going to die unless something changes. The waves are looming over the boat and they feel like they're going to be consumed by it. But Jesus has this curious reaction. He tells the lake to be calm, and then he questions why they're so afraid. In Matthew's gospel, when you see this little story, you see it's sandwiched between two little teachings and two events. One is a man coming to Jesus and says, "I want to follow you. But first of all, I've got to bury my father." And Jesus says this quite brutal reaction to it. He says, "Let the dead bury their own dead. You follow me." That seems a bit harsh, doesn't it? And that story is just immediately before this one, that when they go off on the lake. And then immediately afterwards, the disciples and Jesus encounter a demonized man. And he's on the other side of the lake. And the whole village is totally terrified of this guy because he's so strong that when they chain him up, he can break the chains. And his reputation has got everybody in fear. Jesus deals with this situation. You can read that story as well of Jesus telling the demons in the man to go, and everything becomes calm and he becomes really well. And in Matthew's gospel, when you see this little story, you kind of, you feel like Matthew is trying to say something here, that between the cares of the world, the man who wants to bury his father, and evil personified, you know, the extremes of evil that has everybody totally wrecked with fear, there's this little story of Jesus teaching the disciples about life. And Jesus is always on duty. Whenever you see him with people, he's always trying to train and coach them how to live life well. And this story is no exception. So one of the things that we realize is that that traps us in the storms of life and in the difficulties of life are some two really bad habits. And I wonder if any of you fall into these habits, but they're common habits. They're thinking habits and reaction habits. Thinking habits that make you feel trapped in a situation. We sometimes say they're the three P's. It's a style of thinking that says that every problem is personal, permanent, and pervasive. Every problem that I encounter, whatever it is I'm the problem here. It's permanent. It's personal. There's something wrong with me, and that's the reason why I can't overcome in this situation, or why I feel so rubbish, or why I can't talk to people. There's something wrong with me, why my relationships are constantly falling. I'm constantly falling out with people, or I'm struggling with relationships. It's personal. There's something wrong with me. It's permanent. Nothing's ever going to change. This thing that has happened that has, you know, disrupted my life is actually something permanent about it. It's just always like this. Nothing ever changes. Pervasive means it affects absolutely everything about life. I can't see this problem as a contained thing. Actually, as I start to think about it, I realize that it's going to spoil everything. And you get this kind of thinking style. It's a recognized thinking style, personal, pervasive, permanent, that leads to anxiety and depression. It's been recognized by psychiatrists and psychologists repeatedly that sort of thinking habit causes or leads to anxiety and depression eventually. Those kind of three P's. Now, is that something that you fall into? Because most humans struggle with it to a degree. The other thing, the other habit that follows on from that kind of thinking that is really unhelpful are what we call reactive habits. So what do we do to react to the things that we're afraid of? These are the things that trap us in the boat, in the storm, and make us unable to be calm and have faith, as Jesus was trying to call out. What are the reaction traps? One reaction, a common reaction, is escapism. What do you do when you feel anxious? One thing that's really common is people turn to escapism. You know, how do you switch off from your anxious thoughts? What do you put on? What do you look at? Where do you retreat to? You know, many of us will find that we'll turn to a screen. And sometimes if you're self-aware, you'll be aware that actually you're doing it slightly to try and switch off your racing thoughts and calm yourself down and give yourself a bit of a breather from, you know, the whirring in the head. That's a really common thing, and many of us will get stuck with those forms of escapism because you realise that you're opening the door a little bit to habits that can become very addictive. You know, lots of people are stuck in a trap with pornography that they can't get free of, and they'd love to, and they're aware this thing is dominating my life a little bit. And actually, what I think is that often if you dig deep beneath an addiction to pornography, there will be a desire to escape from anxiety. As anxiety commonly accompanies addictions. Well, it's nearly always a part of it. And a desire to escape and just give yourself a bit of free time. Another thing that we do, another reaction trap that is a really common thing, is control. Are you one of the controllers? Controlling when, you know, what people see of you, what people know of you, controlling eating habits, controlling when you go out, what you do, what people say about you, who knows you, who's allowed to speak into your life. We become controlling in an attempt because actually we're afraid of being out of control. And for many of us, control is our reactive habit that becomes life-dominating. It ends up in things like eating disorders and all sorts of things. And another thing that we do try in reaction to anxiety is ruminating, fretting, worrying. And often worry is, you know, that kind of trying to solve it. by thinking about it. You know, some of us have got familiar pathways. It's like we've worn a groove in our brain and we've thought over and over again trying to, you know, solve a problem, and we're aware that we never get off the merry-go-round. It just goes round and round and round in our heads. And those things, we actually find that we become defined by those reactions to fear. They become us. Well, that person's really controlling. Well, that person, you never see them because actually they've disappeared. They're half the time they're not really there. They're on some form of escapism. And we realise that we are trapped by our reactions, by our thinking styles and by our reactions. That's a living reality. And for the disciples that day, they were trapped in the storm and all they could see was the storm around. They could see no way out. But they're about to be transformed. They're about to have a transforming experience in the company of Jesus. And this experience is on offer for each person who begins that journey of following this incredible man who carries with him the Spirit of God, who is training us how to live well and to how to overcome and be fear-free, I believe. So these disciples, they're in the middle of this scene on the lake, and they watch Jesus stand up and command the waters to be still, and then ask them the question, why are you so afraid? Have you no faith? And Jesus is giving them storm-calming practice. He is teaching them that this is normal for us. This is the way it should be. There is nothing to fear on the water. Your problem that causes the storm in your life is not a problem to Jesus, who is God over all. He is relaxed and calm. He's extraordinarily relaxed in this little story. And we need to cultivate a view and an understanding of who the God that we are following is and what he is like. Because he is not like us. He is not fretting, and he is not on edge, and he's not irritable. He is calm, and he is full of power, and he has promised to be with us. And it is transformative to understand that and to understand who Jesus is. Relief from the storm is not the best thing that could happen to you. You know, to solve the things that make you anxious is not the best thing that could happen to you. Some of us, I think, we almost wish God would treat us like a pet in a cage and just make it a bit better, more comfortable for us. But God says to you, you're far more than that. You're a storm calmer yourself. And I'm calling you into the business of calming storms. And it's better for you that the occasional storm rises up in your life and you learn how to be somebody at peace in the middle of a storm. It is better for you that you learn how to sleep in a storm than for the storm to go. Because that is the ultimate peace, isn't it? There is Jesus relaxed and asleep on a cushion in the end of the boat while the storm is raging. And then he gets up and he calms the storm. Because he's at peace, the peace in Jesus spreads out across that water. But do you know something? You get the feeling that Jesus' first preference is to have the storm rage and to sleep. And it's not ours at all. But what about if God is saying to you about the things that make you anxious and fearful? Whatever it is, exams, people, your home life. What if he's saying, I don't want that storm to calm just yet because I'm calling something out of you in this situation that you cannot get in any other way. You can't learn to calm a storm when there's no ripple on the water. But I'm calling out of you courage like you didn't have any idea was in you. And I want you to learn how to think and get out of thinking traps. I want you to learn to shake off your reactive habits and to know who you really are. So time is going on, but I'm going to give you three little things that I think would help with that. Three things that help with being transformed. One is to get rooted. Another one is to meditate and not fret. And a third one is to learn how to speak to your storms. What does it mean to get rooted? Jesus was in communion all the time with the Father. That's what the New Testament tells us. It's clear from his interactions with people. He's always talking to God the Father. He withdraws and takes time out with God the Father. It's been scientifically proven that meditation calms the brain. Even meditation that isn't Christian meditation. Apparently the Dalai Lama's brainwaves are very smooth and calm because he does a lot of meditating. But meditation has been proved to change the way that you think. It switches off a part of your brain that turns up worry. And it switches on another part of your brain that gives you reason and thinking and calms your emotions. That's been proven to happen when people meditate. So we get rooted in the love of God and we know who we are. Listen to this. I think we've got a quote, as a reading from Romans 8, but I'll read it out to you. This is what Paul says about people who are led by the Spirit of God. He says, because if you're led by the Spirit of God, you're sons of God. You didn't receive the spirit of slavery to fall back into fear, but you have received the spirit of adoption as sons, by whom we cry Abba, which is a name for dad, father. The Spirit bears witness with our spirit that we are children of God. And if children, then heirs, heirs of God, fellow heirs with Christ. What these New Testament writers began to understand was that they'd been given a spirit within them that was not prone to fear. And if you're a follower of Jesus and you've invited the Spirit into you, resident in your body is the most powerful being in the universe who is never, ever afraid. That is the spirit. Paul talks about being adopted into the family of God. It was a very deliberate choice of word adoption, because adoption in Roman times meant you were placed in the family and you got the inheritance of a natural child and you could never be disinherited. A natural child could be, but if you chose to adopt a child, it was impossible. It was totally against the law. It was permanent. That's an amazing thing. So what Paul is saying here, that you and I have been invited into the family of God and it's permanent and irrevocable and we have all the inheritance of the Son. That starts to change you if you root yourself in that reality. If you meditate on those truths instead of fretting and going on the worry cycle, it starts to change you. But then the disciples, the third thing that they've got to learn is they've got to learn to actually stand up in the storms and speak to a storm. And, you know, what is that all about? What's happening here is that Jesus has authority. And it's a word that we often use because it's a New Testament word where Jesus gave authority to his followers to use and to use his name. And somebody with authority is able to walk into a room and bring calm and order. I don't know if you've ever been in, maybe you've been, can remember, cast your mind back to being at school and maybe chaos is reigning in a classroom. Maybe there's a substitute teacher, remember that? And, you know, people sort of, you know, they mess around with the substitute teachers. But when the real deal is there, the person who knows their authority, they only have to walk into a room and everything becomes calm and orderly and as it should be. Jesus is saying, I'm giving you authority to use in your life. And sometimes we've got to learn to actually stand up and speak to the storm of anxiety in ourselves and say, be still. Peace, be still. We've got to speak to the fear that we're going to be rejected or that we're not loved or that we're going to fail or that we're not going to prevail in life. And we say, peace, be still to the storms of life. And the more we learn to exercise authority in that way, the more we are transformed. And that is one of the main agendas of the Holy Spirit in the life of a follower of Jesus, is to transform us, not just to help us have a nice little life. It is actually for us to be transformed. And the storms are the very things that transform us. I'll just finish with one one further point, and that is that Jesus is one thing that happens in the storms of life is we get trained. And training, Jesus is really into training people. And we're trained how to live well by Jesus and by the New Testament writers. A few years ago, I read this story, and I read it, and I saw something for the first time ever that I'd not seen in this story. Perhaps we could just put the story back up, and I wonder if we could just have a quick look at it. It just says here, I've read this story since I was a little girl, and I noticed something that I'd never noticed before after 40 or so years of reading this story. It says here, leaving the crowd behind, they took him along just as he was in the boat. There were also other boats with him, and a furious squall came up, and the waves broke over the boat. And I saw that little sentence, there were also other boats with him. And I just thought, I've never noticed that before. But in this story that we often talk about and read, you imagine there's this one little lone boat with Jesus, and this thing happens, and afterwards they tell the story. But actually, it says in Mark's gospel that there were other boats on the lake. And in that storm, I imagine that those other boats, they didn't see anything that was happening in this boat at all. All they saw was their own storm, and then suddenly everything was calm. And the reality is that when we go through an experience with God where we learn how to calm a storm, where we learn who he is and we get a fresh revelation of who God is that will enable us to calm our minds and to get rid of our reactive ways and choose to have faith and believe in him, then not only does the storm in our own lives begin to calm, but the whole lake, the surroundings begin to change. And that is the call of Christ to each one of us. That is what the church is supposed to be doing on the earth, is bringing peace, that as we ourselves find peace and are transformed by Jesus, the world should benefit. Paul says about Christians, he said, the whole of creation is aching and groaning for the sons and the children of God to be revealed. I believe that is true, that creation itself awaits you arising and getting on top of your fears and anxieties and becoming a person of peace, so that when you walk into a room, peace begins to break out. Order and calm comes, and people find their bearings and begin to have hope for the future. Do you want to be a storm calmer? Somebody who can bring calm into areas of injustice in society, who, when you're talking to your friends, people say, have you noticed the atmosphere of peace around him or her? Because I think that's the call of Christ to each one of you, to conquer fear and to find that revelation of Jesus that says, you know, a storm is okay. You could see it in Rachel's story, couldn't you? You know, a storm broke out in Rachel's story in her life last year. And she had this immense peace. There was a battle and a struggle for it. But it was amazing to be around her. She made you feel more peaceful. And that is the call of Christ for you and for me, for each one of us, that we would be those storm-calming, peace-carrying people who have broken out of the trap of thinking and reactive ways. And it's an exciting call. And so I want to put that out there for you, that some of you have been longing for God. You've been asking God, would you solve this? Would you help me? Would you help me with my relationships? Would you find me a partner? I feel so alone. Or with my exams, they're eating me up. Or I don't know who I am. And I can't get rid of my anxieties. And I wonder if God is saying to you today, can you stand in the storm? Can you speak to it yourself? Because I've put my spirit in you. And the highest priority is not to get rid of the storm. It is for you to become fully the person that God has called you to be and to ultimately bring peace on the earth. And Jesus said, blessed are the peacemakers, for they will inherit the earth, he said. So that's a great calling, isn't it? I'm going to finish there. I'm going to pray. And then I think we're going back into worship. Father, I pray for all of us. This is not something that you can snap your fingers and find that it's solved. But we can see the call of your ways, your spirit for our lives, that we would be people like that, full of peace, full of authority, calm when others are losing it. And I pray for each person here. I pray that your breath, Holy Spirit, would come and fill the room, that you would pass through each person, that you'd blow away the storm clouds of anxiety and fear. Dismantle the fog and let us see clearly that you are God and all is well. I pray, God, for revelation. Revelation is a biblical word. It means a kind of an eye-popping understanding, opening. I pray that for you, that God will show you that you are in the grip of his hand and that he will never leave you. He will never forsake you. Jesus said, I'll be with you every day to the end of the age. That is forever. So come, Holy Spirit, I pray. Come and bring your freedom. Come, Holy Spirit. Amen.